Money FM 89.3, best of prime time. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
That's right, you're listening to Money FM 89.3. I'm Chua Tian with your Market View. Now, a rather painful week for markets so far as investors mull the risks of a recession amid interest rate hikes by major central banks around the world last week. Now, in the US, the broad-based S&P 500, for one, registered a new closing low for 2022, while the Dow slipped into a bear market earlier this week. And away from the US, the British sterling hit a record low earlier this week as well, after the new UK government announced its so-called mini-budget to spur the economy, risking further price increases and higher interest rates. Closer to home, asset managers who are reeling from multi-billion dollar losses in Russia are now reevaluating the risks of doing business in China amid ongoing tensions with Taiwan. Well, lots to unpack this week, and to help us out, we are joined by Robert Hoffman, Head of Investment Counselors at City Private Bank. We are also going to be talking about how we should position our portfolios as we weather this period of uncertainty. Hi, Rob, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you loud and clear. Rob, let's start with the U.S. The broad-based S&P 500 registered a new closing low for 2022. The Dow not spared either, slipping into a bear market. How do you see the major averages closing the month?
Well, closing the month, we're a few days out from that. I think the way to look at this right now is the longer-term picture is probably more bearish. But in the short term, we're at extreme levels right now after the news last week and what we've seen with central banks. Bearish levels right now on both equity position as well as on sentiment are at extreme levels. So there's a lot of pressure in the markets that seem to be driving markets lower from here. But when you get a setup like that, especially at a month end, when we do something called window dressing, where asset managers like to sell their losses and then buy some winners, this is where we could see a potential reversal. And the big event to look at on Friday would be the release of the PCE, or the personal consumption expenditure data, which is the Federal Reserve's primary indicator for how inflation is being passed through or managed by the U.S. economy. A number that comes in lower than 6% could spark a really furious turnaround in equity markets on Friday afternoon, which would be after market close here in Asia.
Right. So, Rob, what are you expecting for Friday?
Well, I think you could see a number. I think the baseline expectations are around 6.3% for the PCE. But if it comes in under 6%, you could see it's on the S&P numbers are in the 2% range, and NASDAQ even slightly higher than that.
Well, so far away from the PCE figures, investors seem to be digesting that the Fed's hawkish tone at the September meeting, and in particular, their comments about peak rates. Do you think we can expect any form of stability soon?
I think stability is in the eye of the beholder. I don't think the Fed has shown any instability in what they're doing. I think they've been laser focused on trying to drive down inflation. Now, we're starting to see, interestingly, some deflation or disinflationary measures coming through right now. But the Fed is so focused on employment as the true barometer to gauge the effect of their policies that they seem to be just intent on continuing to push rates higher. So as long as employment continues to grow and labor markets stay tight, the Fed's going to stay on its course. Now, central bank monetary adjustments, I will point out, do take a long time to filter through to labor markets, anywhere between, say, 6 and 12 months. So this actually means that while the Fed's pressing ahead, we may not actually see the effects of today's increases until sometime around year end, and possibly not even until mid-2023. And for this reason, we expect about a 70% chance of a recession in mid-2023.
Do you expect peak rates to go beyond 4.6% next year?
Well, I think this is continually being a moving target. And again, I think the Fed, the disinflationary measures we're seeing, can the Fed push up beyond this number? Absolutely. But the disinflationary numbers, the further the Fed goes now, we actually think that the more damage they can actually do by going up above that, say, 4.4%.
Right.
We actually think the numbers that have come off this week to about 4.3%, just given what the news over the last few days and just some of those exogenous risks they're trying to factor in.
Right. And Robert, I do want to briefly touch on the U.S. dollar strength. Some analysts, they were saying that a surging dollar could hurt the profits of MNCs, U.S. MNCs, and be a precursor to an economic crisis. Do you agree with that assessment? What are your thoughts so far?
Yeah, it's a fair assessment, but I would stop short of saying it could trigger an economic crisis. I mean, crises are normally associated with, say, popping of asset bubbles or even major liquidity dislocations where there's no liquidity within markets. But neither of these conditions is really present today. So that means that most of the negative consequences that we could see from a further dollar strength, which we are expecting, will largely be contained within equity markets. I mean, there will still be a little bit of damage done to the broader economy, but largely the results will be affecting equity markets. Now, again, important to point out, half of S&P 500 earnings are generated in currencies other than the U.S. dollar. So there's going to be a real impact, and those tend to be concentrated in cyclical companies. So this is where we have been advising clients for a number of months to reduce their exposures to cyclical companies in nature and replace them with more durable names, higher quality earning streams, things that tend to be more stable and U.S. dollar focused.
Right. And from the U.S., Robert, I want to take us to the U.K. The new U.K. government announcing its so-called mini budget to spur the economy, which of course includes £45 billion unfunded tax cuts. Now, the IMF has urged the U.K. government to reconsider those plans. A question that's on my mind, and I presume on a number of investors' mind as well, does the U.K. government know what it's doing by borrowing in a high interest rate environment and cutting tax when prices are sky high?
That's a funny question. Do they know what they're doing? I wouldn't go so far as to say that they don't know what they're doing.
Right.
They're certainly going against the grain. But remember, the Conservative Party now only has the ability to control fiscal policy. So it's the one lever at their disposal, not monetary policy. And so with a big election coming up in 2024, they want to use their only tool at their disposal to try to sweeten the pot for markets and for voters. And so that lever right now is tax cuts. Now, the IMF, this is a highly unusual step that the IMF has taken to come out and rebuke them. We saw the Bank of England, which everybody expected the immediate response would be an emergency meeting with an emergency rate increase to try to counterbalance the policies that were announced by the government. We didn't see that, and that's helped to calm markets a bit. But the real bounce we've seen recently and over the last day or so in pound sterling has come from the fact that nobody really believes that the English government's going to be able to go through with their promises. They're going to have to revise these lower. Should they not do that, if they stay stagnant and they continue to push forward with these taxes, you could see the pound drop well below parity.
Right. And so since you're talking about the British sterling, let's talk about that. It has hit a record low against the greenback earlier this week. Where do you foresee the pound to go in the near term, and how will the BOE react to this, if at all?
Yeah, near term, there's going to be a slight upwards bias. There's technical indicators in the market of it being oversold. There's still a lot of positioning risks where I think you're going to see it pushed a little bit higher in the near term. On top of that, you layer in the expectations that the British government will not be able to go through with their plans, and there will be some speculative bets that are placed on seeing additional appreciation in the sterling. However, our view really is, even beyond that point, even if the British government now walks back this tax plan, you've created enough uncertainty in markets that there's going to be a continued flight to safety to stronger assets like USD. So below parity at some point here, probably before year end.
Oh, I see. If you're just tuning in, we're now speaking to Robert Hoffman, Head of Investment Counselors at Citi Private Bank. And Robert, closer to home, the World Bank has slashed its full-year forecast for East Asia and the Pacific region to 3.2%, which is down from April's projection of 5%. To what extent do you think this is within expectations?
It's certainly well within expectations. I think the issue with the World Bank's putting this report out now is that they only put it out twice per year. And so it comes at this time of year, but this was pretty clearly telegraphed at any point during mid-year. There are two major factors that are affecting growth in the region. The first one, which everybody's been talking about for more than 2 years, which is the situation on the ground in China, whether through the property markets or the resistance to reopening more broadly within the economy, it has really dampened growth, and that affects every other economy outside of China. And then the other one, which is the news everybody's speaking about over the last few weeks, especially the last couple of days, has been U.S. dollar strength. And U.S. dollar strength does put pressure on emerging market economies because those that are importers versus exporters, it tends to get more expensive to input goods and services against the U.S. dollar. And also the costs begin to rise out of control, and there are relatively thin margins. Important to point out, there are some pockets of real bright areas, which are India, Indonesia, Malaysia, Thailand. These are well above trend in growth and were actually revised upwards. So it's broadly a story about China and the U.S. dollar, but you can still find real pockets of value within Asia.
Right. Well, some bright spots there. But asset managers, in the meantime, they are reassessing their exposure to China amid political tensions. So question is, where do you see them moving their investments to?
Yeah, this has been sort of people waiting for Godot. They've been waiting for these fiscal stimulus measures, these monetary stimulus measures that have come, but they haven't come in the form and the speed with which we're necessarily the magnitude that they think that they need to come. So we've seen, given some of the other shocks to the rest of the world, we've been able to find some real value, and asset managers are looking at dislocations within markets like Japan, where the currency is beginning to start to look like it's stabilizing and there's some real value in those markets. Even into Hong Kong with some of the Hong Kong banks, as they begin reopening, there may actually be some upside in Hong Kong banks. But by and large, most asset managers have repatriated assets away from China into U.S. dollar-denominated assets, and specifically those who have flexible mandates have been thinking about fixed income. We're starting to get to really interesting levels on fixed income where they tend to serve as a risk hedge against riskier assets they have in their portfolios.
Right. So finally, Robert, just one last question before we let you go. How should we as retail investors be positioning our portfolios right now? Which asset classes and geographies should we be looking at?
Well, most investors today, if you're anything like me or if you're anything like the average investor, you probably own way too much cash right now, which has felt secure and safe over the last several months. But at some point, it becomes a real drag on your overall portfolio performance. No time more than now when you see bond yields starting to spike on treasuries over 4.5%. There are real opportunities in trying to pick up those high-yielding assets that used to be considered safe and secure assets that now actually give you a yield on top of the protection in your portfolio. I would remain underweight on equities most broadly, slightly underweight, but be selective about the sectors that you're looking for. Stay away from cyclical assets. Those are the ones that tend to be most affected during recessions, which, again, we foresee in the next couple of quarters. And so you want to make sure that you have high-quality earnings, high-quality cash flow streams. Own a little bit of cash, but mainly this is the time to be out there picking away at bonds. Most people say, well, I can earn so much in deposits and not bonds. The story is, in a year when companies can no longer issue bonds because it's too expensive, there won't be many bonds left. Now is the time to begin adding them methodically into your portfolio as you find yield levels that are attractive to you.
Right, so bonds indeed. Thank you very much, Robert. That was Robert Hoffman, Head of Investment Counselors at Citi Private Bank. Thanks for joining us on Money FM.
Pleasure. Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance.